You pull up the weather on your tablet the morning of a cross-country. The prog charts look reasonable. The area forecast says VFR with scattered cumulus. The METARs at your departure and destination both look flyable. Everything reads green, so you launch. An hour into the flight, you're threading your way around. Build-ups you didn't expect. The ride has turned choppy. And somewhere in the back of your head, a small voice is saying, "Somebody had to have flown through here this morning." I wonder what they saw. Here's the thing. That information existed. You just didn't look for it. On pattern on traffic pattern. Here on radio hangar. Today we're going deep on pilot weather reports, or PIREPs, and why they deserve a lot more of your attention than most pilots give them. First, a word from our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every meaningful step of the journey. First solo, private pilot certificate, instrument rating, commercial, each milestone has a coin. A real physical marker you can hold in your hand, great gift. Great way to mark the checkpoints that actually mean something. AviationSoul.com. All right, let's talk about PIREPs. When you do a standard weather briefing, whether that's through 1800WX Brief, 4Flight, or any other service, you're looking at a lot of model-derived data. The area forecast is built by meteorologists interpreting computer models. The winds aloft forecast comes from upper air soundings and model output. The terminal aerodrome forecasts, the TAFs, are human forecasters making educated predictions about what conditions will look like at a specific airport over the next 24 hours. All of that is valuable. None of it is an eyewitness account. A PIREP is an eyewitness account. It's a report filed by a pilot who was actually in the air, in the actual atmosphere, at a specific location and altitude at a specific time. They saw the clouds, they felt the turbulence. They watched the ice accumulate on their wings, and they reported it, so you would know. That is categorically different from a forecast. Forecasts are predictions, PIREPs are observations. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. There are things a PIREP can tell you that nothing else in your briefing can. It can tell you where the tops of an overcast layer actually are, not where the model thinks they should be. It can tell you that there's moderate turbulence at 8,000 feet, even though the forecast said light. It can tell you that the icing the forecast called for at 10,000 feet is actually starting at 7,000 feet. That gap between forecast and reality is exactly where PIREPs live, and on the days when you most need accurate weather information, those are usually the days when the gap is widest. Let me walk you through what a PIREP actually looks like, because the format is compact and it takes a little practice to read them fluently. A routine pilot weather report starts with the letters U and A, which stands for upper air, essentially shorthand for aircraft observation. An urgent PIREP, which we'll come back to, starts with UUA, after that, identifier. You'll see a series of coded elements separated by slashes. The format goes in a consistent order, and once you learn the sequence, reading a PIREP gets fast. The first element after the identifier is the location. This is typically given as a fix, a VOR identifier or an airport identifier, followed by a direction and distance. So you might see something like OVR OKC or something that translates to over Oklahoma City. Or you might see SFO 030040, meaning a bearing of 030, and a distance of 40 miles from San Francisco. Next comes the time in Zulu, the universal coordinated time that aviation runs on. Then you get altitude or flight level. This is the altitude where the observation was made. It's listed in hundreds of feet, so a value of 080 means 8,000 feet. Then you get aircraft type. This matters more than it sounds. An observation of light turbulence from a Boeing 767 means something different than light turbulence from a Cessna 172. The aircraft type gives you context for the intensity of what was experienced. After aircraft type, the PIREP gives you sky cover and cloud heights if there are clouds to report. You'll see entries for cloud base, cloud tops, and whether the layer was scattered, broken, or overcast. Then comes weather. This can include precipitation, visibility restrictions, or any other significant meteorological phenomena. Then temperature at altitude, then wind at altitude. And finally, turbulence and icing, which are often the most critical pieces of information for practical flight planning. The turbulence reports use a standard scale. Smooth is self-explanatory. Light means slight erratic changes in altitude or attitude. Moderate means changes that strain the aircraft structure or that make walking difficult in the cabin. Severe means large, abrupt changes in altitude or attitude, with the aircraft temporarily out of control. Extreme means forces so severe the aircraft may be structurally damaged. The icing reports work similarly. Trace is barely perceptible accumulation. Light is accumulation that may create a problem if continued. Moderate means even short encounters can be hazardous. Severe means de-icing or anti-icing equipment cannot control the accumulation. Now here's a real-world PI rep decoded. I'm going to read you one and then walk through it piece by piece. UA/OVMEM-030050/TM1423/FL090/TPC172/SKBKN075/TA-09/TBMODT. Let me walk through that. OVMEM-030050 means the observation was made on a bearing of 030 degrees from Memphis International at a distance of 50 miles. So roughly northeast of Memphis. TM1423 means the time was 1423 Zulu. FL090 means the observation was at 9,000 feet. TPC172 means the aircraft type was a Cessna 172. SKBKN075 means the sky was broken at 7,500 feet. TA-09 means the temperature at altitude was minus 9 degrees Celsius. TBMODT means turbulence was moderate. So a Cessna 172 pilot flying northeast of Memphis at 9,000 feet at 1423 Zulu reported broken clouds below them at 7,500 feet, a temperature of minus 9 Celsius, and moderate turbulence. That is information you cannot get from a TAF or an area forecast. That is ground truth from someone who was there. Now let's talk about urgent PI reps because those have a different operational significance. An urgent PI rep, the one that starts with UA instead of UA, is filed when a pilot encounters conditions that pose an immediate hazard to other aircraft. Severe turbulence, severe icing, a tornado, a waterspout, wind shear that nearly took the aircraft out of the sky. When you see a UUA in your briefing, stop and read it carefully. That pilot was telling the system, "This is serious, and you need to know about it before you fly into this area." The FAA and the National Weather Service use urgent PI reps to update forecasts and airmets in real time. They're the mechanism by which real conditions feed back into the forecast system. Here's something that surprises a lot of student pilots. When you're doing a standard weather briefing with a live briefer at 1800 WX brief, that briefer will read you PI reps that are relevant to your route and altitude. They're part of the standard briefing sequence. But if you're doing a self-brief through an electronic service, you have to go actively look for them. They won't pop up and introduce themselves. In ForeFlight, you can enable PI rep display on the weather map. They show up as small symbols with color coding by type. In Garmin Pilot, it's similar. On aviationweather.gov, you can pull PI reps directly, filter by area, and get them in plain text or decoded format. The key is building the habit of looking for them. They should be part of your standard pre-flight briefing, not an afterthought. Now, let me be honest about the limitations of PI reps, because they're real and you need to understand them. First, PI reps are sparse. On busy routes between major airports, on days when a lot of IFR traffic is in the system, you may get reasonably dense PI rep coverage. On a Tuesday morning in the middle of the country at a lower altitude, you might have almost nothing. Absence of PI reps does not mean absence of significant weather. It means nobody filed a report. Second, PI reps age. A PI rep from 2 hours ago is still useful context, but weather moves and changes. A report of smooth conditions at 6,000 feet 3 hours ago doesn't mean it's smooth now. Most briefing services will flag the age of PI reps, and you should pay attention to that timestamp. Third, PI reps are subjective. Different pilots have different thresholds for what they call light versus moderate turbulence. An experienced air carrier pilot with thousands of hours in turbulence might call something light that a lower-time private pilot would call moderate. The aircraft type entry helps you calibrate this somewhat, but it's not a perfect system. Fourth, a PI rep reports conditions at one point, at one altitude, at one time. The atmosphere is not uniform. You might see a PI rep for smooth conditions at 8,000 feet on your route, but there's a reason PI reps are described as point observations. They're a data point, not a guarantee. With all of that said, a well-read PI rep gives you something the rest of your briefing cannot, a direct link to what is actually happening in the air. Used correctly, they're one of the most powerful tools in your pre-flight weather analysis. Let me give you a practical example of how PI reps should change your decision-making. Say you're planning a flight over a mountain range. The forecast calls for light to moderate turbulence below 12,000 feet, that is, by itself, a vague and not particularly actionable statement. Light to moderate turbulence covers a wide range of experience. Now imagine you go look for Pyreps along your route, and you find three reports from the past 2 hours. The first one is from a Beechcraft Bonanza at 10,000 feet reporting moderate chop with occasional severe jolts. The second is from a Piper Archer at 8,000 feet reporting the same. The third is from a Cessna 172 at 9,500 feet reporting severe turbulence and a loss of 500 feet of altitude before recovery. That forecast just got a lot more specific. The forecast said light to moderate. The Pyreps are saying severe repeatedly from multiple aircraft types across a range of altitudes within the last 2 hours. That is actionable information that changes the go-no-go calculation. The airman certification standards expect you to be able to obtain and analyze weather information, and the examiner on your check ride is not just asking whether you checked the weather, they're asking whether you understood it, whether you made a reasoned decision. Pyreps are part of that picture, and being able to walk an examiner through what the Pyreps along your route were showing and what that meant for your decision demonstrates a level of weather awareness that goes well beyond checking the app. Here's the other half of this that pilots often overlook. Filing Pyreps when you're in the air and you encounter something significant or even something routine that would be useful to someone following you, you have an obligation to report it. This is not a legal requirement in most cases, but it's a professional one. The whole system depends on pilots feeding information back into it. If every pilot simply consumed Pyreps without ever filing one, the system would go dry. Filing a Pyrep is simple. Contact ATC and say something like, "Any traffic, I have a Pyrep." The controller will typically respond and take your report. You give them your location, altitude aircraft type, and what you observed. They format it and get it into the system. The whole exchange takes about 60 seconds. You don't need to have encountered severe conditions to file a PyRep. A report of smooth conditions above a cloud deck with the tops at a specific altitude is valuable. A report of clear skies at altitude when the forecast called for obscuration is valuable. Pilot reports of ordinary benign conditions help other pilots know what they're flying into just as much as the alarming ones do. If you're training under instrument conditions, or if you're building toward an instrument rating, getting comfortable filing Pyreps in flight is a skill worth developing. Now, it's part of the larger habit of treating yourself as a participant in the aviation system, not just a consumer of it. Let me walk through how I personally sequence Pyreps in a weather briefing, because the process matters. I start with the big picture. I look at the surface analysis and the prog charts to understand the synoptic scale weather pattern. Where are the fronts? Where is the high pressure? What's the general flow? From there, I go to the area forecast for the region I'm flying through. This gives me a broad expectation of conditions. Then I look at METARs and TAFs at my departure destination and a few airports along the route. These give me ground-level snapshots and near-term forecasts at specific points. Then I pull up Pyreps. By this point, I have a mental model of what conditions should be. The Pyreps either confirm that model or challenge it. I'm looking for anything that doesn't match my expectations, and I'm looking specifically for icing, turbulence, and cloud top information. If I find Pyreps that paint a significantly different picture than my model, I go back and look harder at the forecast products to try to understand why. Sometimes the forecasts are simply behind the actual conditions. Sometimes there's a mesoscale phenomenon the area forecast didn't capture. Sometimes the Pyreps themselves are from unusual altitudes or aircraft that don't translate directly to my flight. The goal is not to find the data that lets me go. The goal is to build the most accurate possible picture of what I'm going to fly into, and then make an honest decision about whether I can handle it safely. The Aeronautical Information Manual has an entire section on Pyreps in Chapter 7. It covers the encoding format, the intensity scale for turbulence and icing, and the procedures for filing. I'd encourage you to read through it if you haven't. It's one of those sections that pays dividends in proportion to how seriously you take it. Aviation Weather Services and the National Weather Service Aviation Center publish guidance on interpreting and using Pyreps in conjunction with other products. The better you understand how all of these tools work together, the better your weather decision-making gets. Here's something I wish someone had told me when I was training. Weather literacy is a skill, and it develops over time. The first few times you do a full standard briefing, it's overwhelming. There's a lot of information, and the formats are dense, and it's hard to know what to prioritize, but you get better. Every briefing teaches you something. Every time you fly through conditions you briefed, you build the feedback loop between what the product said and what you actually experienced. Eventually, your mental model of how to read weather gets sharper, faster, and more reliable. PIERPs are part of that loop. They're the system's way of connecting the model world with the real world. Use them. Sources for this segment include the Aeronautical Information Manual, the Aviation Weather Center at aviationweather.gov, and the FAA's Guidance on Weather Products for Pilots. Find us at radiohanger.com. Safe skies out there. See you next time.